Welcome to Hungry Authors, the show for aspiring authors who will stop at nothing to accomplish their writing and publishing dreams.
We're your hosts, Liz and Ariel, and we're honored that you're here. Let's dive in.
Okay, friends, I am so excited for today's episode because we have my dear friend Lori Melton with us here today. She is a spiritual director and an all-around incredible person. I have had the privilege of working with Lori for a few years now and watching her journey. And let me tell you, she is the epitome of a hungry author. Her persistence through this publishing journey, she just got a book deal. And I'm so excited to let you hear from her today and hear all about what she's doing. So Lori, welcome to the Hungry Authors podcast.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. I love this podcast. I've listened to every episode and have really gained a lot from what you guys have taught every time. You know, like you said, I got to know you a couple of years ago through Hope Writers. Mm-hmm. And took a few classes with you there and really got started in this whole writing thing that had always been a dream. So anyway, so a few years ago in January of 2021, I had been wanting a topic that I could write something substantial about. I wanted a book to write, but I needed a good topic. I didn't just want to start out on some topic just because I wanted to write a book. And all of a sudden, I was coming to January 2021, and I had learned a practice as a spiritual director of walking with a spiritual giant, where they had us choose someone from history that we admired spiritually and study their life. And I was really resistant to it at first. I was like, not comfortable with this. I don't like this, but I was assigned to do it. And found it so powerful that it was one of my favorite things that I took away from the course. So anyway, I was coming into January 2021. I had finished my training, so I wasn't assigned to walk with a giant anymore. But as I was thinking about January and what God might want me to do to grow closer to Him, I thought, I want another spiritual giant. I'm going to choose a spiritual giant. And as I thought about that, all of a sudden I got the idea. I remembered, a few friends had started asking me, because in our circle, we don't do anything like this. Like, we don't venture into other people to study that, you know, spiritually. But other people around me were kind of tentatively saying, like, so what is this? Is this really legit? And tell me more. And so anyway, I had started sharing with people about the practice. So all of a sudden, this idea came, like, I want a new giant. I'm going to walk with a giant for a year. And as I walk with a giant, I'm going to write articles as I go about what's happening in my life through this giant. But it's going to illustrate the practice that everyone's asking me how to do this. And I remembered there's an author named Sharon Brown, who's also a spiritual director. And she wrote this fantastic series called Sensible Shoes that presented spiritual formation practices through the story of four friends, right? So it was this like really soft, warm, inviting way to learn spiritual formation practices that you might be like not super comfortable with, but as you saw those friends doing these things, and then she would present a practice at the end of each chapter where you could kind of dip your toes in secret, you know, and try it for yourself. And I just, after I remembered that book and I remember reading it and just going, Sharon, what you just did, you use story to present spiritual growth practices. Oh my gosh, I would love to do that someday. So in that same time where I'm like, okay, I'm going to pick a giant, I'm going to write articles, I thought, and it's not just going to be my story about the giant I pick. It's going to lead the readers. We're going to give them a big takeaway. It's not just going to be, okay, here's Lori's story, big deal. It's very fascinating, but how do I need to know how I do it? Like, so as an added component, I was like, okay, as a spiritual director, even, I'm going to walk people along from chapter one. They're going to get hooked, hopefully, in the introduction and thinking, how do I do this? I want to do this. And then they're going to start in chapter one, walking with they're going to choose their own giant and start walking and then reading my chapters as they go and are walking with their own giant.
Okay, so to back up for a minute, can you tell us more about what it means to walk with a giant? Are we talking about physically walking? Are we talking about a metaphorical walking? What is a giant? Can you explain some of those terms to us?
Yeah, that's good. Walking, what just is, it's studying, but it's studying that person, but it's also kind of feeling like you are walking the trail of this year of your life with that person beside you in a way. I don't talk to the giant. I don't pray to the giant, but you start studying their life, and then you let whatever aspects of their life fascinate you lead you into other areas. So you're walking with them because you're letting their life guide you and what you're feeling drawn to. And spiritual giants are anyone from history that you admire spiritually. So people like, say, Billy Graham, Corrie Ten Boom, Eric Liddell. Who else? I've got them on my wall here. Eugene Peterson, who wrote The Message. But then even like Madeleine L'Engle. Madeleine L'Engle had a really strong faith, and she's got some excellent books on that. Henry Nouwen,
What is cool to me about this process is, you know, you are a spiritual director, you come from a Christian faith background, but really anyone could follow this process, no matter what your kind of faith background is. Someone, you could study Mahatma Gandhi, you could study, you know, anyone really, the Dalai Lama, if you wanted to, and you could kind of walk with that person as your spiritual advisor almost for an entire year. Is that right?
Yes. I mean, people look at it with, like, lots of times the word mentor comes up. Who would be a mentor from history that might, you know, there might be a God piece in your life where he could maybe want to use that person in your life because of what he's put in you that he has for you to fulfill. You know, if you're a musician, you might want to study someone who's been a musician. You know, people that are interested in peace might want to study somebody like Gandhi. So everybody wants to fulfill their full potential and become everything that they were meant to be. And so these people from history help us do it. We haven't dived into that deeper than like reading a biography about somebody, but to actually say, no, like, I'm going to spend an even longer amount of time, and I'm not just going to study them. I'm going to say, like, if one of their practices was intriguing to me, I'm going to veer off and I'm going to study that practice. Or who were the people that mentored them, you know, and then I'm going to veer off into that. So one thing just kind of leads into another, and you feel it changing and shaping who you are created to be, like helping you more fully become what you were always meant to be.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm curious. I'm reminded a little bit of a past guest of ours, Kat Bob Magira, who wrote a book about Edgar Allan Poe. Now, I think her approach was very different for yours, but similar in that it's called Poe for Your Problems, but it's basically about how Edgar Allan Poe helped her through a really hard time. And it was sort of completely by accident. She didn't necessarily do it nearly as intentionally as you're talking about it. And Edgar Allan Poe would, of course, be a very unconventional choice for
as a spiritual
guide. but it's the same idea of letting somebody from the past, building a relationship with them to some degree, right? Like, how would you describe sort of the actual relationship building, you know, without necessarily getting too woo about it, unless you want to, or unless that really appeals to the reader. You know, some people really, I think, might actually begin to feel these people in their lives in a very deep, meaningful way, even feel like you're like they can communicate with you in some way, or like maybe you even know them well enough now that you can, like, WWJD, you know, like you would sort of be able to predict what they would do or how they would counsel you. So tell me how it feels like from a relationship perspective, like, at the end of this year, do you feel like you really know these giants, or how do you view them afterwards? You know,
you really do. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh. The emotional connection Because of the struggles that they've helped you overcome. So I'll just let you in on who I picked for my giant. Okay. So the year that I wrote, this was my third giant. So the year I wrote the book, I picked Mr. Rogers, Fred Rogers, Mr. Rogers from the neighborhood way back when, because I saw the movie Tom Hanks put out. And I was so captivated by his love for people and how he listened to people. And that was two of the things that I felt like, oh my gosh, I want to be more like that. So as you study them, like reading his, like that was one of the first things that captivated me was what a loving, intentional, 100% with you person he was. And the stories about, him going to the gym every day, and he would stop for people at the gym, like the locker room attendant said at his after his funeral said that he was one of the ones that would stop and talk to him about his life and listen. And this is one of the busiest men on the planet, and yet whoever was in his circle, he took time for. And it was so cool, like in my second or third month reading about his life and praying about, like, I want to be more like that. I was making breakfast for my husband one morning, and he was taking more time than I wanted him to take. And like, so like I'm pretending like I'm listening to him, but I'm not fully listening to him. And he kind of shortens up what he's going to say, and he gives me a kiss, heads out the door. And I swear, as I'm hearing his tires crunch on the gravel, and all of a sudden I get this flash of Fred Rogers and go like, oh my gosh, what would he have done in that situation? He would have stopped. He wouldn't have moved over to the sink and started doing the dishes and say, gotcha, yep. And I thought, it just grabbed me. And I thought, next time, I'm going to stop and I'm going to be fully present with him. So, anyway, that was my first little eureka that, oh my gosh, I am changing and I'm going to change through this. So, that was the little thing. And then just throughout, like, his words, he's known for saying, I like you just the way you are. And a couple months later, this was maybe month four, that thing was like making me almost angry, because I was like, that is not possible. You tell me that people can actually honestly say, I like you just the way you are, you don't have to change. And I just was wrestling with that for a whole month. I'm like, I'm just going to chew on this. And anyway, during that month, I had had a struggle in my relationship with my mom and some choices that she had made and the standards that I was holding her to. And through the month of just thinking, writing, praying about, is this even possible? And how did Fred, thinking about other people in his life who also shared about how he accepted them just the way they are, just kept tumbling around inside of me. And so by the end of that month, I had realized what an unhuman standard that I was holding my mom to, and was able to just release that. And just, it changed our relationship. So anyway, there were things like that later on in the year. I say he introduced me to Henry Nouwen. But really what happened was, Henry Nouwen was his spiritual mentor, and I had this like desire to learn more about Henry Nouwen, and I kept waiting for when I felt the release to do it. And finally in the summer, I felt the release to do that. And Henry Nouwen just he was a workaholic. And we get out of balance. Brian and I get out of balance all the time. We run the sanctuary, we got six kids, he has his own business. We have like just we're always like putting out these crisis, pray for us. We're in this terrible time. We have to get through this. We need, And Henry Nouwen struggled with that. And he even went on a year sabbatical. And during a sabbatical, he got himself over his head again in a bazillion projects, and would sneak into the office when no one was there to print out what he had been working on, so no one in the office would know that he was still working. And he even d died of a heart attack that some say might have been caused by his overwork.
Oh
Anyway,
my
reading
gosh.
about him in the summer and reading that this guy was full of the love of God And so, I mean, so much fruit in his life of God, you know, Jesus in his life. And yet he struggled all his life with something he never was able to overcome. And somehow that like spoke to me about these areas and that I wasn't able to overcome. And instead of it being like bad news, like, guess what? You're not going to get over everything. It was actually comforting. And I just thought, you know, again, like these human people teach us how to be human. They just brought us. So anyway, so then this is the even greater thing. So you say, how much do they mean to you by the time you're done walking with them? So in October, I went to Florida with my son and daughter-in-law for a conference. And they asked me to come and babysit. We had a 6-month-old grandson and they were going to be at the conference. And I was like, yep, sounds good. So we're there. And all of a sudden I overhear someone saying, mention Winter Park, that they're going to like, there was a couple hours or free time in the afternoon at the conference. And someone said, oh, they thought they'd go into Winter Park. All of a sudden in my brain, I'm like, Winter Park. I'm like, I think that's where Fred's summer home was, like with his family growing up. All of a sudden I'm like, it is that Winter Park. And that's where his alma mater college is.
It's Winter Park, Florida.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm from Jacksonville. So
oh, you are.
Yeah.
So Fred's family had a winter home in Winter Park.
Okay.
As he was growing up. And then he went to Rollins College.
Mm-hmm.
And so anyway, I was like, oh my gosh, I'm just close to this piece of Fred's life.
Yes.
And I there was like an engraving in the wall of a hallway. And I was like, so anyway, my kids, I said, can I go, you know, for the afternoon? They're like, yeah, go. Turns out they had just dedicated a statue, a monument at Rollins College the day before to Fred.
Gosh.
And there's a walking tour that had just started a month or so before. So I went on this walking tour. We went into Rollins College. The guide pointed out all these special things. I'm like, we're standing on the sidewalk and we're outside of a dorm room. And the guy points up to like a second floor dorm window and like, that's where Fred's freshman room was. And I'm like snapping pictures and feeling like tears coming. Mm-hmm. And like, why am I so emotional? Mm-hmm. Anyway, so then they walk, he's like, and I'll take you over to this monument that was just dedicated yesterday. And I'm like, oh, if I could have just been here yesterday, everybody was here, like people from the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so we walk over there and we're standing there looking at it. It's, I just want hours.
Yeah.
I just like overcome by how this man, I can't even put it into words. Mm. All of a sudden the guide points over, there's a man and like three people that walk into the circle. He says, that's the sculptor right there of the statue. I'm like, well, it wasn't appropriate. He was talking to these other two faculty members. So it really wasn't appropriate to go over him. And then he kind of was in the circle and then he scooted out. And I was just like, what is happening? So anyway, the last stop on the tour was this music hall. So the guide says, okay, I got one more stop to take you on. We're walking over there and there's a couple people in front of us. And the guide says, hold on a minute. I think that's the president of the university. He's walking into the music building. There might be something going on right now. Well, we may not be able to go in. I'm like, okay. So we walk up the stairs and a woman opens the door and hands me a program. She goes, hi, are you here for the lecture? And I'm like, what's going on? Lecture? I didn't know anything about it. And she said, oh yeah, the sculptor Paul Day is going to give a lecture in 15 minutes. And I'm like, I said, do you need tickets? And she goes, no, it's open to the public. I'm like, what? So then I went and I sat and listened to this English sculptor that never had heard of Fred before, had this commission, worked on it for a year or two, and just was profoundly impacted by Fred Rogers.
Mm-hmm.
And just, so these divine serendipity moments.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, that's so cool.
That's incredible. And so your book that is now forthcoming, and we're going to talk about your publishing journey in just a minute, but your book is called right now Journey with a Giant. And in the book is your plan to, or do you, I think you already have the manuscript basically done. Do you have, like basically a curriculum or, you know, these kind of spiritual practices that people can, you know, pick a giant of their own and then kind of put into place these spiritual disciplines and practices that you teach them in the book to have and to cultivate this meaningful relationship with this person. Is that right?
Yes. Okay. Yep. Yep. That's what the book will do. So every chapter, it's based on a year-long journey with a giant. So there's four articles, one for each week of the month, and there'll be a prompt after each article. There's also a month in the appendix. There's a monthly prompt list. It's a one sheet where that you would fill out what you're going to be doing that month, as far as like, I'm going to be using this book, or I'm going to be, you know, listening to these podcasts, and then a journal that you keep while you're walking with your giant that month. I've also created a companion journal that goes with this that works really well. So that will come out. I don't know if that will come out when the book's published, but I had to create that because I have a small group of people walking with giants the last 2 years. And after the first year that I'm like, we need something all together and that like a journal to use. So I created the journal and it worked great. And this year there's a pastor from Texas that was in my group last year who's leading a group in his church starting tomorrow. So we've just edited it, the companion journal, and he's getting ready to lead the first in-person group tomorrow.
That's amazing.
Wow. Yeah.
Okay, so tell us more about the journey to getting a book deal for you. Congratulations, you have a book deal now, but I know from our relationship that it has literally been years. It's been at least 2 or 3. So kind of, you know, give us like the quick version of what has that process looked like?
Yeah, the process started in COVID when we were all locked down. And I was making my bucket list of what I might use my time for. And I probably listed 15 or 20 things of how I might use my time. And on the very bottom, I wrote, oh yeah, I want to learn to write better. Like I just want to do something with this desire to write that I've had my whole life. But I put it on the bottom because I'd been talking about it for 30 years and never done anything about it. So I kind of didn't believe it was going to happen. But that week I ended up getting an email from Hope Writers with some 5 days of promotional lectures for writing. And I was like, oh my gosh, I think that just was an answer to my prayer. So anyway, that started in 2020. So I joined Hope Writers. I started taking classes through them for writing. I started writing sporadically for our ministry, The Sanctuary. Just sporadically, I would put out newsletters. And then when I started in 2021 writing about a giant, that got me writing articles regularly. And I took a class with you or two and learned the mechanics. I didn't even know there was mechanics to what a book was. Like, mm-hmm. What an introduction has to do certain things. I didn't know that. I mean, like, yeah. One of our 6 weeks class, basically I spent that whole time learning that there was things that an introduction needed to do and writing it and how important that was. Mm-hmm. So anyway, I spent since 2020 all the way till now, just learning components of writing. And I started I went to a writer's conference. Somebody in my life was like, you got to go to this writer's conference. And I was like, I'm not really a writer. I just kind of been doing this little thing on the side. And so I went to a conference, and through that, they were like, you need to sign up for a one-on-one. And I'm like, what's a one-on-one? Well, there was open slots. So I just went. And so, you know, a few conferences, I ended up getting connected after I came home from that conference. I was like, I think I really am a writer. And people are telling me I was in the middle of writing the draft for The Journey with a Giant. And they were like, this is a book. And I'm like, yeah, I think it is a book, but I probably just self-published it. They're like, oh no, this is a good book. You need to really pitch this. And I was like, so after I got home with that, like one thing just kind of led to another. After I got home from that conference, I thought, I don't know what the heck I'm doing. I need a coach, you know? So then I called a friend who was a writer and I thought she would coach me, but she kind of blew me off and said, hey, here's a name of a woman. call her. She works in nonfiction. I'm a fiction writer. So this woman that she gave me was actually the director of the Christian Writers Conference that I went to. And I was like, oh my gosh, that's intimidating. But anyway, turned out I went to a book launch within that same week at this Christian bookstore. There was going to be a book launch. And I went, and in the room was the woman that this friend recommended me to contact. And I was like, okay, I got to do this. I got to walk up to her. So I walked up to her and I had a card, you know, like a business card maybe. And I told her who I was and I told her who referred me. And I said, you know, and anyway, so she said, contact me, we'll set up a 15-minute appointment. So I did. And she ended up spending over an hour with me because I started telling her the concept and she loved it. So anyway, we got connected. She started like unofficially coaching me. She wasn't even charging me. I mean, I think we were meeting together once a month. And I finally said to her, Anne, I feel like I should be paying you. And so I started paying her. And she was the one, before I went to the Scriptoria conference, she said, oh, you got to have a one sheet. And I'm like, what's a one sheet? And so she told me that this one sheet is a description of your book and I needed to bring it to the conference. I needed to have it ready to pitch. And so I had like a week and we put it together. And then I just started pitching and ended up pitching at Hope Writers, my first official pitch ever of my book. I mean, the classes that came up just in time, like write your book proposal. And Anne was like, you need to write a book proposal. I'm like, I'm not even done with drafting my book. And she says, no, you need to write a book proposal. What is that? Well, then Hope Writers offered a class. Worst time in the world. It was the summer. I was going to be gone half the summer, but something in me said, just do it. Just do it. Even if you're half done when you get to the fall. Turns out, thank God I did that, because when I got to the fall, there was a prepare to pitch at the Hope Writer Conference, another class that you had to have as a prereq your proposal done. So I'm like, oh my gosh, I needed this and I didn't even know it. So I signed up for that prepare to pitch and then was able to get, because I bought a VIP ticket to the conference, the Hope Writers Conference in the fall, which I didn't even have time to look at what that was when I bought the ticket. I was just like, whatever it is, it's only $50 more. I'm just going to buy it. So turns out, if you had a VIP ticket, you could get a slot for a one-on-one at the conference, which I did not know. And so when I got the list of people at the conference that I could pitch to, I was going to have a proposal. And I get the list, and on the list was my top pick for the publisher I wanted to talk to that I thought would be a perfect fit. And I sent, I don't know if I was the first person after it opened for who you could, you know what, but I ended up getting her first slot the first day. And I was like, huh, first or special. I don't know what this is. So anyway, so we got all prepared to pitch. I was standing outside the door and I was like, this is it. I'm either, it either is or it isn't. Let's just go in here and do this thing. So I went in and, you know, she loved it. It went as I like, I, she loved it. She said, send me everything you have. And I walked out of the door and just kind of shook my head and went, oh my gosh, that just went great. You know? So then we went back and forth and it ended up falling through after three months or so of negotiations. And that was a year ago. And so then I just kept working on my book, working on the small group I was leading. And one thing just kept leading to another. Just like, just keep showing up. I ended up writing a weekly newsletter a year before I decided I'm going to start writing a weekly newsletter. That was great. And then I never thought I would podcast, but being in Kent Sanders' group, he just makes podcasting so and easy. So I thought, you know what? I think I could start a podcast just reading my blog posts. Like if I'm going to do a newsletter anyway, maybe because I love podcasts and people don't have a lot of time to read. Maybe audio format would be helpful. So anyway, then I'm just like, okay, I'll start a podcast. I don't know. It might not sound good. I don't know, but I'm having fun with it. So one thing led to another. And then I came home from the summer conference this year and pitched a couple times. I wasn't pitching. I just went to one-on-ones. I wasn't pitching. And in those one-on-ones, I circled back to the publisher or the editor that I had talked to the year before. And she said, are you pitching? And I said, no, I'm leading a group. I'm working on my manuscript. And she said, you need to be pitching. She goes, pitch now. If you've got other publishers you want to pitch, don't wait till your book is done. Don't wait till your group is done. Go home. And so I went home, re-edited my proposal, sent it out, paid for editing, and then thought, I need to get an agent, or I want to try to get an agent. And I just had that feeling like so much of it is what do you feel like you should do now? Like, what do you think your next step is? Like, someone asked me the other day, do you think I need an agent for my book? And I said, it just depends. Like, what are you feeling? What are you sensing? Because otherwise, that's just what I was thinking. And if it wouldn't have worked, I would have definitely just gone forward without one. But it's just kind of like, just go on what you're feeling. And then if that doesn't pan out, you'll know what to do next. So anyway, I ended up getting an agent. It ended up being my book coach who, and then I had this feel, I asked you for your referral for Don Pape. And I had an appointment to pitch to him. And basically Don was like, you know, this project really isn't for me, but I want to give you two referrals, two other publishers that I think this might be a good fit for. Ended up, they were in the, those two referrals were one of the five first ones that Anne picked for me. And that was the one that the contract came through for, which I had never heard of this publisher, but it a great publisher, perfect fit, amazing contract. I'm just like, oh my Lord, this is fantastic.
Yeah, that is incredible. And what I love seeing in this story is a few things. Number one, you were just kind of guided by your intuition and you were very like trusting of the process. You were like, I know this is the right thing for me to be working on. I know this is the right thing for me to be doing right now. And I'm just going to kind of take the next step in the faith that the right doors will open. That's one thing I love about your story. The other thing I love is just the openness that you had to kind of walking through whatever door did open. You were like, I'm okay with self-publishing if that's the door that ends up opening. I'm okay with having an agent or not having an agent if that works out. I'm okay with, you know, publishing in this sense or this sense. And the doors that ended up opening, you had some doors that closed, but you also had some amazing doors that opened up to you. And now, do you mind if we share who your contract is with? Because I think this is an incredible part of the story for us. So share who your publisher is.
My publisher. Oh my goodness. I mean, don't even show them my stats. Don't show them my stats.
We'll talk about that in a minute. Don't you worry.
Yes. Okay, all right. Okay. So it was this publisher called Ink and Willow. Come to find out, they are part a branch of Penguin Random House, one of the top five known publishers. And they have all the resources of Penguin Random House, but they're a smaller division, Christian division, and they have the vision for spiritual formation. I mean, we met for an acquisitions call. My agent and I, and she had said there'll probably be one or two people on that call. She told me it was a Zoom at 3 in the afternoon, which I wish it was at like 9 a.m. because it was a horrendous day of anxiety. But anyway, so 3 in the afternoon, we got on a Zoom with these four people from the acquisitions team. And you know, one of your big concerns as a writer is if I let someone else publish my book, are they going to really get it? Are they going to change it and like strip it of the power that I feel like it has? And with, you know, with my book going to Penguin Random House or this contract coming up, I'm like, I don't know. It's not a necessary. Well, I knew Ink and Willow a little bit after I'd looked them up, but I still wasn't fully trusting. Like they're not going to want to strip it down to some like fill in the blank Bible study, which it isn't. And I was like, oh, are they really going to get it? Do they know what spiritual formation is? It's not Bible study. It's not. Anyway, so I get on the call with these four team leaders and spent an hour. And when I was done, I was like, they get it. They were totally investigating spiritual formation. They had experience with spiritual direction. They knew about the Desert Fathers, who are these spiritual giants of the way back, like that you don't know unless you're in that zone. And anyway, so I got off the call and I went, this is the perfect fit. And this is going to give the book what I wanted, you know, more than money, more than making money with this book, was I want this book to be the best it can be. And I want it to have the farthest reach that it can have. If that, whatever method that comes from. And so when I got off the call and it just went so well and I felt 100% safe and comfortable, if it were to go through, and excited beyond belief, if it were to pan out. And then I thought, and it's going to do the things that were the highest priority. It's going to be the best book it can be because of the resources that it'll have and have the farthest reach.
I'm so happy for you.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's fantastic.
So Lori, let me ask you the question that a lot of our hopeful debut authors are probably wondering right now. How big is your platform?
This is going to be the most exciting thing to every listener.
Right. Okay.
I didn't even know this till, so I wrote up this timeline to send you guys before we met. Cause I was like, this is fascinating to me to see this timeline of how this all happened in my life. So the final thing I did was I went to my platform and I was like, okay, let's just see what kind of platform Lori has. Okay. Newsletter subscribers, you know, 210.
Yeah.
Facebook friends, 859.
I love that Facebook friends is on there.
Yeah.
Okay. I know. So that's my personal Facebook
friend. Right. It's not like you had like a page or anything. These are just like people you probably know in real life.
This is just like, I didn't even get on Facebook till like 2 years ago. So, cause I was like, I need to do this. Anyway, so we have this ministry called The Sanctuary where we have a business page. So guess how many followers we have on there? 302. So big. And then on Instagram, which is my second like social media, like I know I need to go in that direction, but I haven't as much. 156. Wow. And guess what? My education. Okay. So you think, well, she must have like an English degree. Maybe she's been trained in journalism. I'm like, nope. High school and 1 year of pre-nursing. No writing. No. I've been a mom. For 30.
Well, I mean, all of that just, you know, reinforces what we say on Hungry Authors all the time, which is your platform, like, first of all, your platform is bigger than social media. Mm-hmm. Social media does not dictate whether or not you get a book deal. It does not. We have got to get that out of our brains. And it is about the idea and the writing. Those come before anything else. Yes, you need an audience. But even beyond that, the idea and the writing can carry you so far. Mm-hmm. And that is a big part of your journey. You have this incredible, incredible content. And all along the way, people have believed in it and readers are going to believe in it. They already do. And that is an incredible testament to what you've got going on.
Yes. Yeah. So when I think about it, I go, why did they pick this up? And it's because of the topic. It's because the topic is powerful. What Anne said to me the first time we talked on the phone was, Lori, this is an evergreen topic. And not being a writer, I didn't know what an evergreen topic was. She said an evergreen topic is going to be as valid to today as it is 20 years from now. And she said, I've never heard anything like it in the Christian circle, you know, or in any circle, but even in the, you know, putting it in the Christian formation circle. She goes, I've never heard anything like it. I said, I hadn't either. Like, it's not out there that we know of. So I feel like that's what Penguin Random House saw. They saw, this is a really cool topic framed in a really interesting way, following your journey with Fred. And it has an active component to it where the people are going to be journeying with their own giant. Like, wow, this is awesome.
And don't sell yourself short as a writer. You're a great writer too. You deliver all of that information in a really compelling way. And that's part of the package.
Yeah. That's, you know, that's what you hope. You cross your fingers and go like, and I, you know, you come to believe that a little bit more. Like when the contract came through, I said to Anne, I'm like, Anne, I'm a writer. And she said, Lori, you already were a writer.
Right. Like, yeah.
You know, makes it feel like maybe what I write is any good, you know, but yeah. You know, that just comes over time. Like I even feel that with my newsletter, as I've done that for a year, that as I get responses, I go like, yeah, this is resonating with people, with the ones it's supposed to, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Because it's not even always about like, quote, talent, you know, being good. Although we all hope that we string the sentences together in like a nice way. But like when you get that kind of feedback, when either you get a deal, you get paid, you get subscribers, it means that people are, it's resonating, you know, that it's like, not only that you're like, quote, good, but that your message is connecting with people, you know, like, yeah. One of the, we all make art, whatever art form like that takes for people, and we do it because it's fulfilling for ourselves, but we also want people to react with it, you know, we want it to make a difference. And so when that happens in a big way, like getting a book deal, you know, you get that kind of feedback where people say like, this will make a difference, like, that's a really big deal. Yeah. And I'm reminded of my friend and client who's coming on the podcast soon too, Lucinda Halper, and she's an agent. She's a lit agent. She always says, there are three things that like help you get a book deal: a good idea, good writing, and platform. And you know what? You only really need two. Any combination of those two, and you will probably make it happen. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, hey, if you don't have a platform, that's totally fine. I mean, we're always all about building one, but like shore up a good idea, practice your craft, and like you can do it, you know? And I feel like there might be a little bit here too of that, this idea that we've talked about a little bit before, kind of going back to Kat and her, like Kat didn't have a big audience or a big platform either. And she talks about that in our podcast episode with her, but Edgar Allan Poe does. You know, and it's like, so your idea isn't centered on one giant, but everyone has, like, when you talk about your idea, everyone has their own giant in mind, right? Or at least a couple, you know, and those people do have audiences. Fred Rogers has a huge audience, you know, like, and so I feel like there's a little bit here of this sort of fun cheat, if you want to call it cheating, where like, if you don't have a platform, there are ways to capitalize on people who do have a platform, you know? And so I feel like there's a little bit of that going on too, which is kind of cool. Yeah,
that was a part of the marketing plan. You know, when, because Fred Rogers in there, the Fred Rogers like association or Facebook page has like 66,000 followers. There's a Henry Nouwen Society that has about that, just as many. And then there's a spiritual formation circle and associations that are huge. So I think that was a big part of it too. You know, we can tap into all these circles.
And you, did you put that in your book proposal?
Yeah.
You put the numbers of those.
So smart.
Yeah.
Well, the proposal course, I mean, I think that's the other thing with this actually working was the connections. The connections to other writers, meeting Ariel. I mean, I've probably reached out to Ariel way too many times, but
no, you have not. It's been amazing.
Yeah. I mean, so just one connection, all these connections, when I think about a dedication page now for a book or I see one, I think, oh yeah, what it takes a city to bring this book, like there will be tears, you know, holding the book and thinking about all these people that have helped and been a part. Oh my gosh. And just, you know, continuing to be like, don't do this alone. It won't be the best it can be if you try to do it alone. It might not even work. You might not even stay with it. So just connections in the writing world just are huge.
Well, Lori, we are just so happy for you. We are celebrating with you and I cannot wait to see the book in print. We're going to have you back because we'd love to hear after you've gone through this process. We want to hear like, what is it like to work with a big five publisher from the author's perspective? You know, we've interviewed a big five editor, Stephen Rubin, who actually recently passed away. We interviewed him in season one of the podcast, but we need to hear that from the author's perspective too. So we're going to have you back when you've gone through this and when you're launching your book and everything, so we can talk more about it. But thank you so much for coming on today. And again, just congratulations, super proud of you and can't wait.
Yeah. And I just want to thank you guys, Ariel. We've been together for at least 2 years through this, and this would not have happened without you. Aww. I mean, the introduction, the summary, you know, the book proposal writing, all of it. So I just want to say a special thank you to you and for having me on the podcast. This is a dream come true, because I would listen to your podcast and think, I want to reach out and say, can I be on your podcast? But I'm like, no, you got to wait to see if you get this publishing thing works out. So this was like something I hoped would happen in the future, and here it is. Yeah. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Lori. Thank you for listening to today's episode. If you're a hungry author and you want to learn more about our community and courses, head over to hungryauthors.com. Remember, you have a story and a message worth sharing, and if you've got the hunger, you can make it happen.